Good morning. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellant James Krueger in this case. We have several interesting guidelines arguments here, the first being whether under 2A4.1B3, Mr. Krueger otherwise used a dangerous weapon during the kidnapping portion of
his... Well, with respect to the kidnapping, why isn't it a reasonable inference that Mr. Krueger otherwise used either the pistol or the shotgun that he took with him on this truck to communicate a threat to Mr. Rydell? As I understand the facts, Mr. Krueger had not only pointed the pistol at both of the Rydells earlier in the episode, but had threatened to kill them as well as himself. And given that sequence of events, wouldn't any person in Mr. Rydell's or Rydell's position understand that the presence of guns in the truck represented a threat that Mr. Krueger would harm him if he didn't continue to cooperate?
I think the difficulty lies in the guidelines distinguishing between otherwise used and brandished. I think that this case, the wild waving about, is a brandishing rather than an otherwise used. And this court has recognized...
Well, it's lying. They're lying on his lap. So isn't brandishing normally when... I don't know too much about this stuff, but isn't it usually when, you know, you hold it up?
I would say that's brandishing, the kind of waving around. The guidelines really
right.
make this hierarchy of what you do with a gun, from discharging is at the top, to otherwise used, to brandishing, to displaying, and to possessing. And I think that's really meant to be a step system. And by the time he gets in the car and puts the pistol in his lap, I think that actually goes toward displaying more than brandishing. He's no longer displaying. And he's certainly not otherwise using at that point, the way the guidelines define it. It's loosely based, I think...
If you were sitting next to him in the car, and you were the husband in this case, and you were sitting next to him in the car, would you think he was using that gun?
I would have thought that the entire time, even if it was on his hip, to tell you the truth. And it's a very difficult distinction to make. But as far as the word use, yes. The common sense meaning of the word use, I would think he was using it.
Christian, so what I see is I'm having difficulty with your argument is I think you're artificially breaking up the res geste here of the whole thing. Fact of the matter is he intruded on these people into the cartilage of their home. He had a weapon in his hand. He certainly pointed it at the wife. It was clear when the husband showed up, he was in charge. That weapon was certainly involved in making sure he was in charge. This getting in the truck was no more than the husband's attempt to de-escalate the situation a bit, get his wife out of the way. He was successful in that. He tried to get out of the truck. Your client said no. Sounds to me that weapon was used to control these two people. That's my problem with your case.
I tend to agree with you, Your Honor, and I think the legal problem we have is probably with the guideline. And all of those factors that you're discussing, all terrible facts for Mr. Krueger, terrible situation for the Rydells. I'm sure they still haven't recovered. But when we talk about the legal definition under the guidelines, the question is whether that enhancement implies. I think the district court could have taken all that into consideration, everything he did with the gun between his uncle's house and when he was stopped on the highway, as aggravating circumstances. But when we're talking about a discrete guideline enhancement, I think we do have to look at what the guidelines say legally. And perhaps the false...
What do you mean by guideline enhancement? His sentence is considerably below the statutory maximum.
It is, which is the guidelines. It's considerably below the guidelines, any calculation we get to. But this court has said before in United States versus Love that even a below-guideline sentence, if the guidelines are incorrectly calculated, it can go back for resentencing for the district court to consider that lowering of the guidelines. And yes, anyway, I calculate the guidelines in this brief.
Seems like such a waste of time.
Well,
I mean, obviously he can give them this sentence.
Sure, and that's true in all resentencings. Or I would say 80% of the resentencings, the defendant can receive the same amount of time as he does before. So, but going with this court's precedent, that is one way that the district court makes a decision is considering the guidelines. And if the guidelines are not correctly calculated, a resentencing is in order.
I don't think that should be an automatic rule.
Well, I think you
look
would have
at
to
the case.
I'm sorry?
You should look at the case. What are the facts?
The individual case, certainly that's part of it. I think the United States versus Love case doesn't talk about looking individually at the case necessarily. It just talks about that if there's an error. We get into harmless error if the district court would have said, even if I hadn't found this enhancement, I would give him the same sentence.
Well, here, though, he was really sentenced as a career offender, wasn't he?
No. No, Mr. Krueger was not. That's my next case.
Your next case.
That's certainly.
I'm sorry, there was a mandatory minimum here.
No. He had a statutory maximum of 20 years.
I'm sorry, mandatory maximum.
Yeah.
So he was sentenced under the mandatory. The judge went to the mandatory maximum. Isn't that the guideline sentence then?
That becomes the guideline sentence if the guidelines are above. If we were to win both arguments here, the guidelines actually, if we were to win this enhancement, the guidelines go slightly below that 240 months.
Yeah, you've got to win this one though, right? Otherwise, the guideline sentence is the statutory maximum.
Right.
End of case.
Right. This is the one we have to
win. I'm sorry, I was mixing your cases a bit.
That's okay. I'm surprised I didn't do it first, to tell you the truth. I will talk a little bit about the...
Why not call it a harmless error?
On this issue or all of the issues in this case?
The guidelines issue.
Well, I think it's distinct for all the different issues, but I think harmless error doesn't necessarily come into play here because the judge did consider all of the guidelines significantly and then ultimately disagreed with them. So I think if the guidelines change, there's nothing in the record to show the district court would have been given the same sentence.
Of course he would have.
Well, I think that is speculation. We can guess, but I don't think that's the standard for this court to use, is guessing whether the district court would have imposed the same sentence. Did you have a question? I'm sorry.
Well,
I do.
Okay.
All he has to, all the judge would have to say is, you know, I've considered the guidelines, and I don't consider guidelines sentence appropriate in this case, right? That's the end of it.
Well, that is essentially what the judge did say in this case.
Well, what's wrong with that? What do you have to say?
If the guidelines change,
well, if you pardon,
if the guidelines change, his analysis might change. That's our argument. So I think there were two other questions.
I wanted to go on to whether he committed the instant offense while still on probation from that disorderly conduct conviction.
Yes.
Didn't he concede below that the 2013 possession of the .22 caliber rifle was properly treated as relevant conduct? That's what his class... the objections to the pre-sentence report stated.
You cut out a little bit, Judge Rovner, but I think I understand your question. And there is a concession in the record by trial counsel about that. I think I have a couple responses to that. One is I don't think that's legally accurate. I think there's a good argument that it's not relevant conduct. That count one is not relevant conduct to count two, which is how we're calculating this, is using those two. And this court held in United States versus Jaime that when a district court attorney makes that sort of error with no basis for making the error, then that can be plain error. So that's what we're relying on. I think it was a concession, perhaps, that did not take into account how that sentence would interact with the operating while under the influence sentence. Because if we were just successful on the two-point probation sentence being taken away, that wouldn't have changed his criminal history category. So at that point, it makes sense to concede. But if we consider that operating under the influence, then it does. And I think that concession is no longer appropriate.
What was the change in the guideline?
Which change in the?
The change. You said there was a change that the judge missed.
No, I don't think that the judge missed it. I think that the parties in general didn't calculate the relevant conduct appropriately. And when including that probation sentence, then didn't consider the effect it would have with the operating under the influence. Because just 2 points down in criminal history points didn't change the criminal history category.
Well, what was the change?
The change now is from Category 3 to Category 2. Under our arguments.
Come on. What is the change in the guidelines range?
Oh, the change
that you say entitles the defendant to be resentenced.
Oh, the change in the range. With just removing those criminal history, it's down to 262 to 327, which is still then makes it a 240 guideline range.
So what explanation did the Sentencing Commission give for the change?
Oh, that's not a Sentencing Commission change. That would just be a change if we won our arguments on the relevant conduct issue and the related case issue. There's been no guideline change.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I see my time is up.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Jarosz?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Peter Jarosz for the United States. There are three errors that the defendant is claiming in the sentencing, the first dealing with the offense level and the two dealing with the criminal history calculations. In that first instance, there couldn't be a more poignant use of a weapon than a kidnapping at gunpoint. The Rydells were accosted at their farmhouse by the defendant, who pulls out a gun, pointing it at Ms. Rydell, threatening to kill her. Mr. Rydell, Walter, comes up. He's pointing the gun at him, too, and then basically kidnaps Walter on this spree that then takes place all the way to the taxidermy shop where he's able to escape. And if there's ever going to be a use of a weapon, I got to believe this is it. I don't think there's any way that anybody outside the realm of a arcane legal opinion would think it was otherwise. And the government believes that this just isn't the issue, or nor are these the facts that would create an arguable question in here. And certainly was not plain error for the court to make that sort of determination. And as such,
you know, I agree. I agree, after much thought, to be honest with you, that this was a kidnapping. But it's an unusual kidnapping in that Mr. Rydell, intelligently hoping to save his wife, said to Mr. Krueger, "I'll go with you." You know, normally we think about a kidnapping as someone saying, "No, I do not want to go with you."
Right.
But I do understand, I think.
Well, Your Honor, and it's difficult to get the full import here, but I think Judge Posner correctly characterized it. You have a situation where Walter comes up on the scene where his wife is having a gun pointed at her. He knows he's going to have to defuse it or else they're both dead. I think that's reasonable. He's holding a gun. This guy is frantic. He's pointing it at himself. There's no question this guy's not all together. So he's taking what I consider to be the brave and rational action here. And the truth of the matter was,
I agree with that, but it's not your average kidnapping.
No. I agree, but it's also not an act of free will in the sense of, gee, this gentleman's come up to visit our farm. Why don't I go take a ride with him now? That isn't what's going on. I think, and to divorce the presence of the gun would be to totally eviscerate the facts here. The gun is everything, and it just wasn't an ornament. And it wasn't just merely possessed, and it just wasn't merely displaced, and it just wasn't merely brandished. It was used. The other two errors Dealing with the criminal history point, as the court has correctly pointed out, become rather mooted only from the standpoint that if they're granted this downward sort of adjustment from a level 6 to a level 4, they're still in a category that gives them 262 to 327 months. That's above the maximum.
You know, I do want to ask you something. Why do you view Mr. Krueger's argument in favor of a Category 3 criminal history below as a waiver of the arguments that he's now making? Because his position below was based on one particular error. Now he is pursuing two other purported errors that he believes his counsel below overlooked.
Well,
so why isn't that properly treated as a forfeiture rather than a waiver?
Well, I think only from the standpoint of the question on the initial question of whether or not the June 7th, 2013 activity was relevant conduct to whether or not he committed the crime while serving or while under a criminal justice sentence. And I think that's where the waiver comes in, because the waiver is he's considered it, he's making an argument, but he's conceding that that portion of the argument is just not an issue.
Is he saying that that it is relevant to count one, which I believe was dismissed, was it not?
Well, it was dismissed at sentencing, Your Honor, but it's still relevant conduct. So what he's saying is he's saying the probation, if he was under a term of probation, it had to do with the relevant conduct, and he even cites the provision of the guidelines that talk about
relevant conduct. So he says it's the conduct in count one is relevant conduct, therefore the probation, the fact that the relevant conduct was committed during the probationary period makes counts.
Well, he's trying to emphasize the fact that he didn't plead guilty to that, obviously, cites it as such. And so I think what I'm trying to discern from the argument from the counsel below is that what the defense counsel was doing was trying to emphasize that, yes, that count had been dismissed. It may be relevant.
District Court didn't make all that very clear, did it?
It didn't make it clear in the sense of doing it, because again, what happened was in the best scenario, it would have reduced it two levels, which would have again reduced it from a 4 to a 6. He's still a level 3 at that point.
How about the ammunition? Wouldn't the ammunition count here in any case?
And again, that's exactly right. The ammunition, there was never a break in any of the possession or anything dealing with the ammunition. The ammunition started out on June 7th. That's when it was purchased, and it was in all the way till August 28th. There's no evidence that anybody was taking possession of that. Mr. Krueger emphasized that, you know, he had possession, constructive or otherwise, of the ammunition, you know, during that time period. That's not really an issue per se. So, as a practical matter, that same ammunition and weapon, whether it's the June 7th or the August 14th, spans the time period of the crime, because his probationary term was from February of 2012 to August of 2016, August 16th of 2016, and his conduct would have spanned that time period, and he would have been, therefore,
Is it your position that when he arranged for Ms. Forseth to purchase the rifle in June of 2013, he was always intending to retake possession of the rifle from his father? See, I'm a little uncertain what you think links the June possession with the August possession, other than the fact that they involved the same rifle.
Well, Your Honor, all we know is the claim by Mr. Krueger and his father that this was going to be a gift towards his father. What we do know is that not only the firearm, but the ammunition, as far as we know, never left Mr. Krueger's possession. Nobody, Mr. Krueger nor his father, ever claimed that somehow the ammunition was out of their possession. And Mr. Krueger admitted in the change of plea scenario, or rather colloquy, that he was in fact in constructive possession because he was directing people what to do with the gun and what to do at certain points, and then at various points he possessed it. If you don't have the initial purchase of the firearm and the ammunition on June 7th, that really is the genesis of the possession all the way to August 28th, and Mr. Krueger's control of both the ammunition and the weapon. So the connection is it's the same weapon, it's the same ammunition, it's the same crime, separated by relatively short amount of time of 2 months. And as a result, I think it's relevant conduct, as quite frankly conceded down below that it was relevant conduct. And more important, and not to belie it, but again, that two-level decrease from a level, or rather two-point decrease from a 6 to a 4 will still end him up in a Category 3. And a Category 3 would be exactly what he was looking at on a guidelines level, 292 to 365. And more important, it would still be the 240-month guideline sentence that the court considered and talked about. I see my time is up. If nobody has any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jarosz.
Thank you.
Ms. Christensen, you can have another minute if you want.
I do want to specifically respond to that constructive possession admission that the government is saying. Mr. Krueger said that the change of plea hearing, when the district court asked him, do you agree with what the government says in a factual basis? And the government's factual basis covered August 26th to August 30th, and that is it. And he said, during that time, I was in constructive possession of the ammunition and the firearm. That's it. There's no time period before. There's no evidence before that. The only evidence is that the father had the rifle after June 7th sometime, and that Mr. Krueger came to pick it up on August 26th. So as far as the ammunition, there's no evidence the government presented that it was anywhere but with the rifle, because it was ammunition that went to that rifle. It was matching ammunition. So I do also want to talk a little bit
what
about...
What does it have to do with the kidnapping?
The kidnapping's the next thing I'm going to talk about. The kidnapping is actually count three, relates to count three, and I see I'm out of time. I will say that these are terrible facts. You know, I don't control the facts as the cases come to me, but we often make terrible facts into legal arguments. The district court can consider terrible facts and make a higher sentence. My legal argument is that the enhancement doesn't apply. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Christensen and Mr.